All of us are in situations called relationships, and Jack and I are in lots and lots of relationships, and I've seen both of us get wound up, uptight, and the minute you really start to unravel it and get communicating and start understanding their positions, they understand yours, it changes the whole world. Not long ago, we were down in Orlando, and I was really moaning and getting uptight, and we had an organizational development friend of ours with us, Martin Root. And Martin Root said, the way to get the other person off his position is you just drop yours totally, and it just flows through. He told me that at 6 o'clock in the morning, we were out walking, and that day, it absolutely worked. So what you're hearing works. The next area I want to talk to comes out of sales, and it's called use tie-downs. These work everywhere. It's going to take a while for you to get them, so I want to tell you what they are, how to do them. And then what I want you to do is write each one of the 18 of them on a 3x5 card, and I'd like you to tape them to your dashboard and just try to memorize one a week until you take ownership of it, but you'll have ownership of it for the rest of your life. So now I hope you're listening with big ears. It's going to even pay higher dividends in family equity, family joy, family harmony, family togetherness. Now, what we're talking about is tie-downs, called asking questions that consist of constructing a question so the answer is consistent and it's always going to be yes. The following phrases are attached to the question that creates momentum and helps your child come into agreement. It looks like this. What we're going to do is we'll go through the 18 and then we'll give you some quick examples at the end. One is, aren't they? Two is, aren't you? Three is, can't you? Four is, couldn't it? Five, doesn't it? Six, don't you agree? Seven, don't we? Eight, shouldn't it? Nine, wouldn't it? 10, haven't they? 11, hasn't he? 12, hasn't she? 13, isn't it? 14, isn't that right? 15, didn't it? 16, wasn't it? 17, won't they? 18, won't you? You have done your homework, haven't you? Not yet, Mom. Sit down for a moment. I'd like to discuss this. You would like to do well on your test Friday, wouldn't you? Sure. Having more knowledge about your subject would help, wouldn't it? Yeah. So, if you were to spend time now on your homework, you might have some extra time later to bone up a little, wouldn't you? I guess. So, doing your homework now, before it gets any later, looks like a good idea, doesn't it? Okay, I'll go do my homework, Mom. Kids are the best natural-born salespeople in the world. They can convince a reluctant parent to buy the newest candy-coated cereal and feel as though they're doing the best thing in the world for that child. That is why these two popular techniques, tie-down asking and alternate choice asking, work so well with children. You are speaking their language. The next technique is alternative choice asking. This technique helps your child build a sense of good self-esteem and self-worthfulness and self-love because they retain their power of choice. Would you prefer to set the table now or after your TV program is over? Would you prefer to wear red pajamas or green pajamas? Would you prefer to have cereal for breakfast or eggs? Would you want corn flakes or Cheerios? This is an especially effective way to direct a child's attention away from an object or circumstance that you want to say no to. For instance, the back of the cereal selection in the store again. Mom, I want a Barbie cereal. We can't get that one today. Do you want to buy Wheaties or granola? Barbie. Calmly but firmly repeat the choices. Wheaties or granola? Eventually, their desire to make the choice will prevail, and everyone comes out a big-time winner. Jack and I are both parents, and we love our assignment as being parents. And I hope if you're a parent, you love your assignment. All we're telling you is that questions are a magnificent, masterful way to get into another person's mind and make it harmonic and friendly and cooperative. And the best people know how to ask questions that are reassuring, invigorating, and not threatening. I hope this is helpful to you.
Another place to practice effective asking is at work. Maybe you need some time off, or a vacation, or a promotion.
A raise, or your own office, or new equipment, or more instruction.
Maybe you'd like more appreciation, like to get more recognition or more support.
someone to listen to your idea, someone to help you solve a problem and less backbiting.
Maybe you'd like more cooperation or more understanding from one of your bosses. Maybe you'd like less stress in your life.
More room, more acknowledgement and appreciation.
Maybe you'd like more recognition or a promotion, or how about a transfer?
Someone to trade shifts with you, someone to quit harassing you, or better yet, an assistant.
Maybe you'd like to be included in the decision-making process at work, or get an advance on your salary or your commission. Or perhaps you'd like permission to attend a seminar, a training, or a conference.
Leave of absence, or even a sabbatical. An explanation or a change of policy.
Maybe you'd like a temporary to help get a job done, or a bigger budget. Or maybe you'd like more budgetary control or input on the budget.
An extension, a flexible schedule, more commitment from your employees, or more creative ideas. There's all kinds of ways to have effective asking at work if you just think about it a little bit. And these are trigger points. These are launch ideas that'll have you blast off into new vistas of thinking.
One of the most outrageous examples of asking is in the arena of asking for a job. A lot of times we ask for a job and the person says no. And as we talked about earlier, one of the keys is persistence. Now, in the 1980s, I started the Foundation for Self-Esteem. I wanted to do some educational and charitable work in the fields of welfare and corrections and the public schools. I wanted to train teachers and social workers and prison workers to deliver self-esteem and self-empowerment training to students and welfare recipients and people that were in corrections. The problem is these people don't have money to buy these kind of programs. They're not able to purchase a program like the one you're listening to. So we had to raise money, and that's what the foundation was about. The main thing we were doing was putting on a self-esteem conference for about 800 Southern California teachers. As a result of attending one of those conferences, Larry Price decided to make a career change. He wanted to make a larger difference in the community, and he decided he could do that through My Foundation for Self-Esteem. Let me tell you how he made that dream come true. Larry had just finished working for the 1984 Los Angeles Olympic Committee, and he approached me. He said, "Jack, I'd like to take you out for lunch." I said, "Fine." We met for lunch, and he said, "I want to come work for your foundation." I said, "Larry, I'm not hiring anybody. All the foundation does at this point is put on an annual self-esteem conference for teachers, and we've just enough money left over after each conference to advertise for the next one, so I don't have money to pay you." He said, "That doesn't matter. I still want to come work for you. I want to run your foundation." I said, "Larry, you're not listening. I'm not in a position to pay you anything. There's no money for your salary." He says, "Jack, you're not listening to me. I don't care about the money. I want to run your foundation, and I'll figure out where to get the money." Well, I'd never had such an offer. I said, "Okay, then. How can I lose with an offer like that? You're going to work with me free until you can find a way to raise the money to pay your own salary?" He said, "Absolutely." Well, he goes back to his wife, Linda, and he says, "I'm going to embark on this new path." He said, "I'm going to volunteer to work at the foundation until I can raise enough money to pay my salary." Well, his wife knew that she'd have to go back to work in order to make sure they could make ends meet, and she was willing to do that. But now Larry had two challenges. He'd never run a foundation before, and he had to raise enough money to pay his own salary. So he started asking everyone he knew who was even remotely involved with nonprofits, "How do you do this? How do you run a foundation?" These people either gave Larry advice or referred him to other people. He also took a seminar from a woman who had raised funds for the county and who really knew what she was doing. Larry asked her if she would teach him how to raise funds for this nonprofit organization he'd just taken over. She said, "Look, there's a request for proposals that's been issued by the County Office of Education that you should respond to." He asked, "How do I do that?" She sent him to another person at the County Office of Education who got him on the proposal list. Now, once he'd done that, he went to a conference where he met the people that wrote the video specifications for the proposal request. He approached them and asked them if they would team up with him to actually apply for the grant which they had written the specifications for. They said, "Absolutely." Then he thought that was a pretty good match, and then he said, "Well, there's another person that's bidding on this proposal. Why don't we ask her to join us also?" So now he effectively eliminated the competition. 2 months and a lot of writing later, the foundation's proposal was selected. The amount of the grant was $579,000. Not only had Larry created the salary, but he'd also created a major project for our foundation, all in 4 months simply by asking for what he wanted and what he needed. The neat thing is that program has now been shown to to over 400,000 people on welfare in prisons and Head Start programs. It's been translated into Spanish as well as English. And the foundation continues to go on now, years later, doing this incredible work all over the world because one man wouldn't take no for an answer and asked everyone he met, make my dream come true. Help me, help me, help me. He came from his heart. He asked repeatedly, and he constantly got what he wanted.
And that one man's heartfelt desire has gotten a lot of people off welfare and kept them off welfare. And my dream for Jack's foundation is that everybody on welfare gets to watch and listen to those tapes. What we're saying now is you just got to start asking. Marilyn Kriegel told us the following story about her son Otis. He and his girlfriend had returned to San Francisco from college for summer break. They both wanted to get a job for summer. The difference in her approaches demonstrates the power of asking. The girl began to prepare a resume. She spent the next 2 days at the typewriter getting ready to ask. Otis simply got on the phone and started calling people to see if they had any job openings. 2 days later, she had a half-written resume. Otis had six serious job possibilities, one of which turned into a summer job. For more information about how to go about finding information on jobs and careers, we highly recommend What Color Is Your Parachute by Richard Bowles. We met Richard at a recent ABA, American Booksellers Conference, and discovered that he is somebody who really cares about you and wants to make a difference in your life. Let this wonderful, big-hearted man contribute to your life through his wonderful book. Ask for that kind of encouragement.